Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. With me tonight, as always, is the lovely Jedi Cole Houston. Are you out there?
I feel pretty.
You, because you are. And the unmountable Bobby Blakey tonight.
I am mountable by all, as long as you ask politely.
It's just as long as you bring offerings.
You sneak up on
just
me.
Just ask around.
So we brought Bobby in and his vast cosmetic mind to help us tackle tonight's topic.
Really, when I am sitting around the house reflecting on evil, on the black, coal black heart of evil, my mind inevitably wanders to Bobby.
You're
Which is ironic because he's the antithesis thereof, but for some reason I just can't help but think of Bobby.
You're making me tear up.
Well, that we try. We bring you on here. This is your life, but awful and just with Cole and I.
Well, it's ironic you say that because when it comes to most of the comics, sci-fi, any of the kind of stuff, I'm always a fan of the villains.
Well, good.
Even when I was a kid collecting toys, I had to have all the villains in Ninja Turtles and all of Cobra and G.I. Joe and all of Skeletor and his minions. I didn't give a shit about the rest of them.
Good. Then you've come to the right place tonight.
It made for really lame battles because I had no good guys, but a lot of inter-trading and,
I think there's still going to be a lot of infighting because, frankly, Baxter Stockman and Modulok never got along.
Yeah. Zartan was a whiny little bitch.
They were misunderstood.
They're misunderstood. So last week we covered what it comes down to when you're a hero. What makes a hero? What defines a hero? We dissected the hero. This week we move on to villains.
Yeah, what's this the name is, of the story? Of course. What's the title of this arc?
Well, I don't even know. Why do you always
Bobby? It's called Bobby is Awesome at Everything.
That's the title.
That's
of my
the
life.
Next story arc,
right?
As far as. As Bobby knows. Now, this is, in fact, deconstructing comics to prove a villain. And we got kind of artsy-fartsy there and quoted a little Richard III.
Bobby is Awesome and Everything is better.
It is good. It's a good working title. That's what we titled it so nobody would know.
A lot of people don't realize that deconstructing comics is actually a Shakespearean line.
I don't think anybody cares.
Apparently not.
We know our audience. We're going to take a bit of a detour from last week where we discussed the off the top of our head four quadrants of the makeup of a hero.
Which I have to point out, which I probably did. I haven't gone back and listened to the show because I promptly apparently forget everything I say
like
when I do.
It's like being chloroformed after we're done with the show.
It's okay. Yeah, nobody else listens to the show either.
That's right.
I feel like I've been hypnotized or something. I'll go and listen to the show. Like, that's actually my voice. And it's reasonably the sorts of things I might say. I just don't recall ever saying them. But this, the breaking of the hero into the four quadrants was all Andrew and all brilliant.
It was what I needed to do to wrap my head around the subject matter.
Wrap your head.
Because we are not even amateur psychologists.
Yeah, we are.
We don't even pretend. We don't even, we don't read Psychology Today.
Or Psychology Yesterday.
Y'all are blowing my mind right now.
That's all part of the psychology, Bobby.
This is all things I thought y'all were like genius scientists of some kind. I didn't realize that y'all were normal people.
Well, no, actually, Bobby, remember, after the chloroform, none of this will matter.
That's right. Just hold still. So, Cole, go ahead and posit your idea about what creates a villain.
He's going to force me to pitch this.
I'm forcing you to pitch it here.
I was going to ask yes to you. I thought for, change of pace, because you are talking about the other side of the street, metaphorically speaking. You're talking about the kind of characters that Bobby would gravitate to as a child.
Right.
Because somehow they
had candy. And somehow he didn't wind up being that type of character as a person entirely.
But you do know how offended I was when I couldn't get anyone to touch me. It's ridiculous.
Essentially, what I thought we would take a different approach with the villain than had been taken with the hero, because you are talking about a whole different level of psychology, a whole different approach to you know, you wake up one morning and apparently you can, you know, knock holes in walls with beams of light that come from your nose or something. What do you choose to do with that? Well, obviously you're not going to become a hero because it's a ridiculous power.
Right.
So that makes you bitter.
Okay. But,
and you become a villain. But really, what I wanted to posit here was the concept that at the core of every villain, that this is like the fertile soil in which villainy is, the seed of villainy is planted. This is the foundation, is hubris, this sense of pride, of self-importance, that then that is what feeds all of the other aspects of villainy, be it insanity, be it greed or a sense of revenge or just being a complete ass.
Okay.
That's me.
So give me some examples that I wouldn't think of when it comes to that.
Here's a good one I'll play around with at first. It's possibly bordering on the obvious once you hear it.
Okay.
The Riddler.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I remember, though, as a kid, thinking the Riddler was the stupidest supervillain in the world. And, of course, my primary experience with the Riddler was Frank Gorshin. And every now and again, John Astin.
Right.
Because Jim Carrey made it so much better way later.
Oh.
Well, thankfully, at that point, Jim Carrey may not have even been born. You know, I thought, what a stupid villain to go and like, oh, I think I'm going to go rob a bank, but I'm going to tell everybody first. But my older brother, in this sort of strange way, he would occasionally just have these profound statements that would come out, and then he would just sort of lapse back into being himself. He said, you know, the thing about it is, that is how intelligent, that's how amazing he thinks he is. He thinks his riddles are so indecipherable. They're this Gordian knot of logic that no one can unravel. Therefore, he's willing to just short of saying, you know, if he happened to be at the First National around 03-ish, without saying that in so many words. And so there's a tremendous sense of prideful importance in what you're capable of. My mind is more capable than anyone else's. So much so that I will challenge anyone to figure out what I'm up to.
Including the world's greatest detective.
Yes, especially the world's greatest detective. And that's really what drives him. It's like, oh, you think you're the world's greatest detective? But check this. And, you know,
I agree.
But the thing is, what you see on the surface is the Riddler goes and commits crimes. He wants money or jewels or baubles or if you're watching the television show, books of riddles that are very rare. Apparently, I don't know, like some sort of Oscar Wilde riddle book that only one copy exists.
It's the first edition of Bram Stoker's Riddles.
Exactly. Authors who are told to stick to what they were good at.
Well, so
there's just like one copy in the Louvre or something.
Right.
See, that sometimes points out the fact of how unintelligent these villains are, because there's a reason that only one copy of that book was printed.
Because it sucked. It was... What do you call something that has four legs and doesn't walk? A table. Oh, this book sucks.
I think that boils down to more needing it and not so much lack of... I mean, so much about his intelligence. While I believe that's what he may believe, I think it's more about needing attention. Because any of this stuff, you want to taunt him, whatever, wouldn't it be more of a... You know, if you really think of the bigger picture, obviously the obvious part is commit the crime and let him try to figure out who committed it, as opposed to solve my riddle and find me mentality. Well, I think points out that he's really just, he didn't have a dad or some one of those stupid family situations that no one paid attention to him. And what's all the attention on himself? I mean, look what he's dressed. I mean,
look, now I'm tearing up. All of a sudden, the Riddler is the most sympathetic villain.
Well, here's my thing about the Riddler. While we're on the Riddler, and I'm going to get to my theory later, I want to hear some more of Cole's examples, but here's my thing about the Riddler is, at what point does any of this, be it hubris or anything else we discuss, cross the threshold to insanity? Regardless of whether that's like being a psychopath, or in my case with the Riddler, I really think that one of the aspects of the Riddler is is this this insane case of obsessive compulsive disorder.
Exactly. Oh, and the insane aspect when he puts on that stupid outfit, I believe I've always thought it was a very obsessive compulsive situation. And most of the villains are like that have to have the weird catchphrases or the weird trademark things they leave behind. Or
well, on Bobby's note about the clothing, the choice of clothing, he'd have to be crazy to be an American and wear a derby.
Right. That's rough.
That was the only cool part of his costume.
That's true.
Watch me attack the only part Bobby likes.
There is some kind of an awesome fashion thing within his mind to be able to consider, I'm going to wear a full unitard with question marks or the suit or whichever version you're looking at, carry a cane, and oh, by the way, I'm going to wear a derby because it classes things up.
Here's my cane and my purple domino mask and a derby.
And today I'm going to wear a tie.
Right.
With a big question mark on it.
Just so everybody knows.
The important thing about your...
Do you think, though, that maybe the reason, not only the riddles, maybe the riddles were an afterthought. Maybe the first time he put that suit on, he put the questions on it, because he was so self, had no confidence in himself, that he never knew if it was okay to wear this.
Well, since Bobby decided to go down that road, and Cole, what were you going to say first?
Oh, I just wanted to point out that when you're selecting your unitard, your singlet that's covered in question marks, be sure that when you've silk screened, you're very careful about where you place question marks because you don't want a great big one right over the crotchal area.
Yeah, that leads to too many questions.
Well, you get like a mammal toe and it like sucks it in there and it just likes a hook. It's kind of weird.
Maybe he has one on there so he could suck in his mammal toe. And he can make it an exclamation mark.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Oh, wow.
So he can suck in his mammal toe?
Suck in his mammal toe.
Did you just say that out loud?
And all of a sudden, his costume is turned into this sort of punctuation Rorschach. Next thing you know, Victor Borga explaining the sounds all the...
I have a whole idea for an adult film. Okay, let's move on before someone steals my idea.
All right, so since Bobby crossed my threshold...
I'm sorry.
And my mammal toe sucked in. I feel like I need to put my idea out there, and then we can compare contrast. Because I agree that Cole's idea has a lot of merit. I don't want to say that there are an infinite
I like that as like. Basically, you just said, Cole, your story makes a little bit of sense, but let me tell you how it's right.
No, I want to figure out a way to incorporate it. We're going to come to a consensus tonight. That's we build bridges here, Bobby. I know you're not used to that.
That's the show I signed on for.
Right.
This is supposed to be about evil.
I think it comes from Cole. You think it comes from hubris? I think that
hubris is the foundation.
Isn't hubris that stuff you dip like pita bread in?
That would be hummus, man.
Oh, fair enough.
That's only a small category.
That
of
explains
villains.
Why Bobby, when he goes and eats Mediterranean food, is so full of himself.
He's
been dipping his naan into hubris.
They say that hummus comes before the fall. So
I don't like hummus; it's gross.
Cole, I agree. I agree. There's a large subset of villains that come from hubris, but I think the real groundwork, the foundation of being a villain, comes from exactly what Bobby said. I think it comes from insecurity. And what I mean by that is I can trace, if you name a villain, I can trace them back to an insecure root. The Riddler, absolutely I can trace back to what I feel would be the insecurity of character that he has.
And certainly that's one you can, on either side of the coin, you can take insecurity. How about let's challenge you with Crusher Creel, the absorbing man.
Okay.
I mean, just the fact that someone created that, the creator was insecure.
Right. Which I believe was either Jack Kirby or Stan Lee, because it was a real early...
I rest my case.
So
well, see, and, I, and, and not to totally go off topic with yours, but with you saying that, I think there's a misconception sometimes with the villains where I agree with you. The majority of the time there is that lost mentality of where they want to be in finding their place and all this stuff. I also think it's a perception of the outside world that sometimes we perceive villains that aren't actually villains if you really think of what they're talking about and why they're doing what they do.
Right.
We'll certainly be touching on that as well, because there are some characters that fall into a unique subgenre.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll get back to... And now back to Andrew.
Okay, so Crusher Creel, anybody who turns to a life of crime, for the most part, petty crime, which is, in my opinion, the vast majority of the villains that you get. Whether it's a tech villain, like an Iron Man villain, like Boomerang, or the Ghost, or Spymaster might be different, but any of those...
Shocker.
Spider-Man villains, Shockers, and most of anybody who starts as a petty criminal starts it because, and granted, you got guys like Sandman and who were either retconned or written as, I needed money to help my sick mom, or my house was getting foreclosed on, things like that. But in my opinion, if you start as a petty criminal, you want money. Most of that's going to come from a certain level of insecurity. I think Crusher Creel went into it. Granted, I mean, how much more stereotypical prison villain can you get? He's wearing...
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's wearing the Keystone Cops bad guy pants.
Right.
Party City on November 1st and just bought him out of chain gang costumes.
I don't really like the way you're talking about that. That's a style that I would like to wear sometimes. And
so
that's actually what Bobby wears for pajamas.
Yeah, that got you there. I sleep naked.
Oh, hubris.
I guess you won't be invited back.
I do not rub hubris all over me anymore.
Anymore.
Yes. Ever since the restraining orders.
So that's what I personally feel is a large subset. I think that the largest base of...
Let me challenge you with something where I can argue hubris, and it might be harder to argue insecurity.
You just want to keep using the word. Don't lie.
Hubris means something that you don't think it means, Bobby.
I know. Bobby's always like Beavis and Butthead.
I know, right?
It's like, no, it's not a dirty word, Bobby. It's a classical word.
I'm aware of that.
Now you are.
I'm not as dumb as I look. I couldn't possibly be.
All right, let me just throw a character out there who's a villain who's going to really come of its own. Ultron.
Oh, that's def. I can't argue against hubris with Ultron. I can't argue against hubris.
Granted, it's artificial hubris.
It was programmed hubris.
The aspartame of pride.
Aspartame of pride.
That was actually my cover album.
Yeah, I think so. It was your YouTube cover album.
It was
album.
My heavy metal cover group, my tribute band.
The aspartame of pride. I know, I can't argue that Ultron definitely has some sort of self-awareness that has led him to have hubris. Also, look no further than Lex Luthor if you want some serious hubris on action.
If you want someone who rubs themselves with hubris every night. Lex Luthor, that's why all his hair fell out.
It is. So what about the altruistic villain? Now that we're talking about Lex Luthor and Ultron. What about the altruistic villain? The villain that thinks that he's doing the right thing for the right reasons. Bobby, what you got?
Oh, am I allowed to talk? Are we going to the dumb part of the show now?
Here we go.
Well, yes, sir, we let me say, I like cheese.
So do I, Bobby. So do I.
I'm sorry, what were we talking about? I went off on a tangent of my own.
Do you have any examples that you can come up with about supervillains who, for whatever reason, feel that they're doing the things that they're doing altruistically, that they're doing them for the right reasons?
Well, I think,
There's a justification behind their actions.
Lex Luthor is obviously the most famous of the bunch, and of course the way they've written him over the years and then probably the way he started, it's really shifted into full-on villainy. But if you really think about the fact that, his concern for this super being, one man having so much power, it's justified. Now, the way he handles it is maybe not so much, but, you know, but a lot of that is, you know, and I think there's a few characters like that, and I'm horrible at names of some of these people, but it seems like there's a lot of them that they try to start out with, you know, especially when you take on these, like, foreign villains. You know, you bring somebody, and I'm not saying this guy's one of them, but you take on somebody like, what's his name, like Tarantula. They show up from another country, and they're doing all this bad stuff, but because it's the name of their country, and then it becomes, are they really bad, you know, because they're doing what they think
it's right? Yeah, that's a good point.
It's kind of like the religion factor. When somebody is fighting for their religion, it may be bad to every Christian in the world because they're not Muslim, but it's not bad to them because their belief system is different than us.
Right.
You know, so I think there's...
You bring up a good point because you get a lot of characters like the Soviet super soldiers who would often be classified as villains. Were they really villains?
Right.
Yeah, I think a lot of the villainy aspect is perception. And then, of course, you know, once we buy into somebody as being a villain, and a lot of times it's because of the way they look. You know, they're, for a long time, nowadays it's a little more open where you can write somebody and draw somebody, they could look like Superman and still be a bad guy. But for a long time, the more elaborate the uniform, the creepier, the more insane, or the crazier, they were obviously the villains.
Yeah, anyone with filed teeth was pretty
bad. Yeah. They were either English or they were villains. And
the carnies.
Yeah, carnies, yeah. But if they had the really weird outfits or the weird names or the weird powers, they were the bad guys.
Right.
You know, but I think X-Men, the mutant world, kind of changed some of that because you could bring in some of the strangers. But if you look at that, you even take – it's almost like the good mutants were all like middle-class people, and the evil mutants were all like the homeless, you know, when you look at them. You
they're
know what I mean?
Warlocks or they were – yeah.
They were always like bad or they're crazy. You know, and I think...
Or they'd have the worst possible life.
Yeah.
Yeah, or the worst power.
I mean, but look at Magneto. I mean, you couldn't have had a worse start to your life.
Right, and see...
And then you discover you're the master of magnetism. What else are you going to do but go piss people off?
Magneto's another perfect example of a villain who I don't think is really a villain. You know, he's somebody...
Well, he's a tough nut to crack, but I think he also falls handsomely... into, you know, being a the hubris that the whole prideful.
Well, I think at this point he's fallen off the deep end, obviously. So over the years, he's become a villain, full on villain, because he's lost his mind or lost his path or whatever.
Well, he is so bought into his belief system.
Yeah, his own bullshit. You know,
he's preached this gospel for so long that he's now. Elevated himself to.
Well, he leads the clan version of the mutants now, is basically what it is.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't believe in us, you're wrong, no matter who you are, how supportive of us you are. But in the beginning, you know, it was a guy who was discriminated against and hated on by other people and said, hey, I want to stick up for our people. And not to sound racist, but there's a very culture thing with, like, the black community back then where it was very much like that. Like, he's standing up like Martin Luther King-ish for the people, for the mutants. And
oh, yeah, and in many ways, I think that the whole mutant – in many ways, I think the X-Men was to, you know, if not necessarily consciously, was subconsciously a sort of cultural commentary.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And over time, it's like that's one of the things that I think, and forgive me because I haven't directly read regular series much over the last couple of years, and I'm just kind of getting back into it. But for the long time, I know a lot through the 90s and even the beginning of now is they got away from the in-depth aspects of villains, and it was very black and white, good, bad.
Right.
Very rarely did you have that villain that would show up that was... show up as a villain, but wait, maybe they're not a villain and they're really here to help and they just need some guidance from a Professor X or, you know, a Wolverine for that matter. They kind of help them figure out where they need to be at. And then suddenly you think they're going the right path and, oh, no, they're going to go with Magneto and his people. And you never really knew because there's so depth to the characters. Now it's like, okay, I have the funny costume. I'm the evil. They call me the amazing bouncing idiot and I'm going to rob a bank and now I'm a bad guy, you know. And I think they've gotten away from the black and white, and they just say, look, you have your good guys, you have your bad guys, the end.
Okay. We're talking about villains that aren't necessarily villains, or villains that we can't quantify as villains. There's no black and white. There's a gray area. And this is going to be contentious, okay? I put I put the Joker in this category. I put the Joker dead in the center of this category. Because the thing about the Joker is, he's so insane that his villainy is so focused on one thing, and that's breaking Batman, that I find it hard to see him as a quote-unquote villain. More of a, you know, as much as we talked about Batman being a revenge hero, or, you know, having all of the aspects of heroism built into Batman, I think all the aspects of villainy are built into the Joker the same way.
I think that's a... I agree and disagree, because I think the villain... I agree with that. His focus and obsession is Batman. But he's full-on, I believe, pure evil, too, because he doesn't care who he hurts or whatever to get in the way of doing that. On the flip side, you have somebody like Venom and Eddie Brock, he's not really a bad guy. He just wants to kill Spider-Man.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing about the Joker, right? He doesn't care.
Yeah, but he still will go and rob stuff because he's
content to do. Yeah, he's content to do other things, from petty crime to just shooting a guy just for snoring. You know, I think there's a good. The best way you could describe the Joker is a line from Buckaroo Banzai: "Just soon kill you as go fishing."
True.
And the thing about it is, you have to remove Joker from any of the other classifications solely because, in many ways, he's the closest thing a human being can be to a force of nature. Because you cannot apply any conscious decision on his part to do anything. He is simply mayhem incarnate, because his mind is so polluted and so fractured.
Right.
He has literally ceased to be a human being in anything but the most specific terms.
True. Okay, I'm with that.
So in many ways, he is literally above any classification. You know, there is certainly some greed involved. There is vengeance, insanity, evil. All of the, like you said, he possesses all of the component parts, including the prideful nature.
But the insecurity. I would argue that.
But even then, isn't consciously able to be a part of any of the things he does. He is actually mentally beyond his own actions.
Which is why I think I was saying that. I think that you summed that up really nicely. I think that he's so far removed from humanity at this point that it's hard to classify him as a villain any more than you can classify a hurricane as a villain.
I think that literally, and this is going to be an odd comparison, I know, he is literally on a par with Galactus.
Right.
Because Galactus hungers, and Galactus's hunger, Galactus was a creation of the creation of the universe. He is apparently a leftover from what preceded the present Marvel Universe.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to go with they were both tall.
They're both pretty tall. See, I was going to go with somebody like the Beyonder, who really has no concept or no grasp of what he does when he does what he does.
You know, yes, he simply does.
Right. He does for a reason, and that reason is, for the most part, his enjoyment, which is his pride, or his insecurity, or whatever is driving him without an outside force aside from Batman to do it.
And I think in many ways, Batman just simply became the focus.
Right.
That when Batman comes along, it's like the Joker was going to be the Joker.
Okay.
But Batman comes along and suddenly there's a reason to be.
But it's like that normal mentality of crazy is going to be crazy. They just find something to pin it on and...
Precisely, yeah. That's,
blame the music, blame the movie. Well, he had Batman to blame.
I'm crazy because of Batman. No, you're just crazy. There's no...
Yeah, well, see, and that's one of the things that has always irritated me to some level is, like, I like crazy for crazy. I like evil for evil.
No, really, Bobby?
No, but I mean, like, when it comes to movies, anything, like, if some of my, you know, some of the horror films that I tend to like more than any time is when it shows up, and usually they're not the most popular, famous ones, but when they show up, there's no backstory. There's no reason
Halloween.
This guy's crazy. Yeah, there's no reason he's crazy. He's just a nut, and he's going to kill you because why? Because he's crazy.
Halloween. You know? Like, you have no backstory. You have no forward story. Dude shows up, starts stabbing.
And even when Rob Zombie remade it, the backstory is still he's crazy. There's no he had a messed up family stuff, but he was obviously already crazy.
Right, right.
You know, I think Jeff Foxworthy has one of the best lines too. Back in the days, talks about, you know, people that are crazy. It's like they like to blame have a reason, so they like to blame up. Bad parenting and my bad upbringing. He's like, you know, sometimes you just want somebody to say, you know what, mom was great, my dad was great, I'm just a shithead.
Right.
You know? Sometimes it just is, and I think it makes for such a better, I think some of the best villains, they have no reason, they're just there, and those are also the ones that seem to cause, like Doomsday is one of those, it shows up and causes the most havoc and the most destruction because he just is.
Right. And I'm glad you brought up Doomsday, because Doomsday was definitely on my hot list of characters that gets called a villain, gets sort of grouped in with the villains in the class picture. He's one of the guys in the back, and he's pretty tall.
Right. He's always towering over everyone.
Yeah. But the thing about it is, Doomsday was this entity that was artificially created for no other purpose than to just be the ultimate, the pinnacle of artificial selection. And then they realized the worst thing about, it's like creating a universal solvent. What do you put it in?
Right.
You know, and at that point, they had created something that they're like, realized, you know, yeah, hooray, we got the grant. But did we really need to pursue the grant in the first place? Was this even a thing to look into?
And, you know, all those people always deserve to die.
Oh, absolutely. And die they did.
When they're like, we've made a horrible mistake. You knew you were going to make a horrible mistake when you wrote it down on the piece of paper.
That's right.
Like, you know, I know when I'm sketching out something and it looks bad, I don't keep going. I start over.
Yeah, at what point did the Kryptonian Oppenheimer go, wait a second, I've done something horrible here.
Yeah.
They were too busy trying to destroy their planet, so they didn't have time for all that.
Well, and I feel the same way about the Destroyer. You know, like from Thor, you've got this incredible weapon that every time you unleash it, somebody else gets control of it, or something happens and it destroys a city. Why? Why let it out?
The worst part about that is they always act surprised that it's doing so much
right?
damage.
I know.
They're like, oh my god!
It's like the computer from War Games.
Of all things. Like,
what did you think was going to happen when you plug Skynet in? Come on.
But yeah, and that's what I think, you know, that's one of the things that drives me nuts more, is because the villains in those cases aren't the characters themselves, they're the people that created them.
But
you never deal with those people, you deal with the product.
Because those people are dead.
Product killed them.
They don't go around and say that gun is evil. They're like, that gangster holding that gun is the bad guy.
Right.
You know, well, why don't we go, you know, in that case, why don't you go where he bought the gun that sold him and said, yeah, go kill all those people. You know, it's like, but at the same time, that's that flip issue of blaming the people that really aren't to blame for what people do with whatever they, you know, put out there. But, like, Doomsday was a perfect example of
being... That's the point where it comes into, like, the whole Pirates of the Caribbean don't eat the tourists sort of thing.
Right. But that's, like, the whole thing with Doomsday was, like, the story, like, well, there was, like, for being as a big, momentous thing because of killing Superman, there was no story there. You know, it just kind of, like, he's here, and then, you know, even the way they drew it, they knew there was no story. That's why each book had less and less panels. To the point where there's a bunch of splash pages, because they're like, we don't have a story, let's just have him fight. Let's have him kill him. Oop, he's dead. Now let's sell a billion of him, package it in black bag. You know? And it's like, that's the problem, is they have to create these elaborate things because nobody wants to think of a story that they don't have to tell the villain story.
Well, see, in that particular case, I'm not sure. It's just one of those chicken and egg things. We may never know the answer, but they did actually tell the story of Doomsday, and quite well.
Well, I don't know if the well is the statement to make, but it was okay.
So what was the story of Doomsday?
Nothing satisfies you, but...
I hated that story when it came out. I hated that book. I hated...
You're like the only person on Earth who Snickers doesn't satisfy.
Right.
I really don't like Snickers either.
Oh, my God.
There you go.
But if it makes you feel any better, I'll eat one.
You're not saying you won't eat it if it's there.
Right.
I owned Death of Superman 2. I didn't like it, but I owned it.
So I want to present something to the class.
Keep your clothes on.
I have an idea. So let me ask this question. Who's the worst supervillain that there is?
Wow.
That you can think of?
Bush. President Bush.
Come on. Who's the worst superhero that's appeared in a comic book, not as a...
I was going to say, didn't Bush appear in Savage Dragon?
Yes, he did. And I stopped myself. Thank you.
Okay.
Let's say costumed villain.
Oh.
And no, a suit does not count as a costume.
I'm not sure there's any way you're going to get me away from this. I think that's a matter of perception because it depends on... it's always depends on what the ultimate direction or the goal that villain had. Because if it's somebody...
that's Crazy Quilt.
Crazy Quilt was pretty bad. I'll give you that. The Pied Piper, rough.
Pied Piper was
I think the worst villains were the people that created them.
Right. See, I would go on record, and I will right now on record.
Ooh, here we go.
And say that I believe that the worst supervillain that the comic book universe has ever known is Reed Richards.
Wow.
That's what I'm saying.
That's fine. I can't stand the Fantastic Four either.
That's a pretty bold statement.
It is a bold statement. Who else created the ultimate nullifier? Who else created a door to the negative zone? You want to talk about hubris?
You're just jealous because you can't stretch
that. See, now you're seeing my point of view.
Well, when I talk about Reed Richards, absolutely. I just don't think it all stems from hubris. But I think a large portion, I think you're right, the largest piece of the pie is definitely hubris pie. And I think that Reed Richards helped himself to the whole thing and left nothing left for Ben.
Reed Richards has definitely had the lion's share of hubris, yes.
So you're telling me it has nothing to do with his stretching ability?
No. No.
I think he was packed with hubris, like Snickers is packed with peanuts, before the cosmic accident. And it's arguable that, much like Professor on Gilligan's Island, Reed Richards deliberately put his family and friends in harm's way to create the Fantastic Four, in the same way that the idiots who became the UFOs tried to duplicate that.
So did I just understand that entire statement you get? The only thing I got out of that.
Yes, I am indicting the professor for what happened on Gilligan's Island.
That he crashed him on purpose just so he could make his own family and his own life there with those people?
It was all a cruel experiment. It's so painfully obvious.
Huh.
Who goes to the other side of the island the most?
Right.
And you think Lost was a twisted tale?
How did the Harlem Globetrotters get there?
They were all part of the master plan.
It's like Lost, except with Bob Denver.
It has no ending.
Except that it's like Lost, except that everybody actually went to hell.
Yeah, here's my thing about Reed Richards, right? He is the smartest guy in any room. Even when you got like Tony Stark, Hank Pym, and those type of people, he's still the smartest guy in the room. He's the guy that they go to when they need help with one of their super sciencey supreme questions.
Yeah, it's like when sci-fi authors would like phone up Isaac Asimov when they got stuck, when they wrote themselves into a corner, and he would just sort of dismissively say, well, obviously it's this.
So you're telling me that the smartest guy in the Marvel Universe said, I have considered all the risks of taking my family into this weird solar anomaly, and nothing can happen to them. I'm fine with with everything that can happen to them.
And besides, ray shielding may put the costs up.
Right.
You're also forgetting the whole point of the factor that there was a woman involved, and you know that she was going to do whatever she wanted no matter what he said, because no matter how intelligent this guy has been through the years of these book being out, the one thing he's never been able to get right is the stuff with their relationship.
Well, I mean, the thing about it was, the one thing he did get right about that relationship is he told Sue she couldn't come on the trip. She was the Lucille Ball.
Right.
All he had to do was say, Sue, you can't be in the show. Next thing you know, she's suited up. She's got her helmet on. She's sitting there right next to her brother.
Right.
How do you sanction getting this group of people on that rocket?
How does that pass NASA standards?
I was just going to say, that's a whole unwritten rule. That's, that falls in
that's
the category.
The point where you self-finance. It's like Salvage One.
That, no, that's the same conversation of just like the Incredible Hulk's pants that you just don't talk about. It's little things.
I talk about the Incredible Hulk's pants all the time.
So that's my thing is, well, here's the thing, right? Is the only thing that he hasn't been able to say no to her about is getting on board the spaceship, rocketing into space, because he was an asshat for the rest of the continuity of the Fantastic
Four. Oh, yeah.
But this is the one thing you wouldn't say no to her for?
I mean, the second they crash land, it's like Noseville for the rest of her life.
Right.
Little wonder she hauled off and had trysts with Namor and Silver Surfer.
Silver Surfer. And
God knows who else. Probably Archon.
All way better men than him.
But that's the thing. That's my other point is when you define, and we defined the hero in the last issue, when you define a hero, we define Captain America or even Wolverine or Green Lantern or Batman, right? There are hero aspects
to them. The Punisher.
I was just fixing to say that when you started talking about that, because the fact that the Punisher had started out as a villain.
Yeah, exactly. Or Hawkeye.
Where does that change, and why is it, what makes these individuals so much different that they're suddenly classified as heroes?
Well, Cole, what did we say last issue? It was... I realized that I chloroformed you after the recording,
yeah,
but...
I'll have to go back and listen, but...
But it's,
I think certainly the Vengeance, especially with the Punisher, Vengeance becomes the primary driving force. And it comes down to what you were saying earlier, Bobby, about a matter of perspective and perception. The Punisher was introduced as a villain and then later became sort of an anti-hero solely because there was a deliberate move to shift the perception.
Right. Well, like here's my thing with him. Like, I get it. You'd have somebody like Deadpool who was brought in as a villain, but he's also a mercenary, so he does it for the money. So he can kind of be in that gray area and bounce between people, depending on who's going to pay him the most. You take somebody like the Punisher, who even now, even though he's classified as a hero because most, or a vigilante hero-ish, because he's always killing the mobsters and whoever, but he'll shoot Spider-Man in the face if he's in his way.
Right.
So... To me, that would still keep him in the villain category, just maybe a villain with good intentions.
I think it's the opposite.
Which counterbalances all of it,
Go ahead, Cole. What were you saying?
Oh, well, no, you make a good point there, but I think it's also he's a hero because he might shoot Spider-Man in the face, but he doesn't go after Spider-Man to shoot him in the face.
True, right. True.
Right.
He's not going looking for to shoot Spider-Man in the face.
And he looks up to Captain America. That's the thing. If you run a real barometer for whether you're a hero or a villain, do you look up to Captain America? If you do, then that makes you a hero. If you don't, that makes you a villain.
Well, now we know where I'm at.
Talk about hubris. Okay, I will throw out a villain in the same vein.
Okay.
Also from the Marvel Universe, the Triple J himself, J. Jonah Jameson.
Oh!
One of the most terrible...
Villains. Worst villain of all times.
Okay. I'm with it.
Because of his single-minded hatred for Spider-Man.
And he's probably one of the most diabolical villains, strictly because he destroys him on like a, a national level.
Everything from defamation of character to mayhem involved. Because... when he wasn't content with simply slandering him and buying into anyone who put on a half-ass Spider-Man costume and knocked over a bank while Spidey was meanwhile like fighting the Shocker, and it's obvious that Spider-Man's a bad guy because of that.
Right.
When that wasn't working out, this Hitler mustached Citizen Kane decides to haul off and create the Spider Slayers, any number of robotic... I mean, to the point, this is the height of hubris here. The Spider Slayer that has the Arnim Zola-style television screen with J. Jonah Jameson's face on it, telling Spider-Man that I, J. Jonah Jameson, editor-in-chief and possibly owner of the Daily Bugle. He'd have to be, because nobody can seem to fire the bastard.
Right.
I'm going to kill you. I'm going to publicly say I am going to at least attempt, if not succeed, in murder of another human being.
Has he ever been arrested?
No.
Has there ever been any kind of charges brought against the man?
No. For slander, for libel, for attempted murder, for manslaughter, for...
He is the most successful villain in comic history.
Yes!
I mean, literally, Lex Luthor got where he is today because he took the Jane Jonah Jameson correspondence course.
And the man is healthy as a horse, and he smokes like a chimney. The guy should have cancer by now. He yells so much he should have had a heart attack.
Yeah, he's so stressed out. He yells so much. He smokes. He can't eat well. I mean, he obviously spends his money on Spider Slayers because he's been wearing the same 3-piece suit.
Where does he get all this money to build Spider Slayers, and who builds them?
Advertisers. Advertisers, advertisers.
You know that guy
Pepsi ad on the back of one
of them? Yeah, he's got like some Herb Tarlick on steroids running around.
Thank God we have a WKRP in Cincinnati reference on this show, finally.
Well, you know, it was inspired because we earlier mentioned the terrible tornadoes.
That's true.
Lord.
So, yeah, I agree. I wholly and completely agree. J. Jonah Jameson is the worst villain that has ever graced the pages of a comic book.
Yeah, of any comic, any company.
And perhaps even the most successful, because he's never been defeated.
How many supervillains has he sicked on Spider-Man? How many Spider Slayers has he built?
Hasn't even had, like, issues, because I wasn't a huge Spider-Man fan back in the day, but isn't there even issues where he's teamed up with villains to help them get to Spider-Man?
Yeah, he draws Spider-Man out so the villains can get him. It's awful, and it crosses the line at some point into pure insanity, because Spider-Man helped rescue his son when he turned into a crazy moon wolf. Spider-Man brought him back down.
But that was still Spider-Man's fault.
But it wasn't, because Spider-Man had to, like, what'd he do? Did he go into space to get him, or some craziness, because he went to the moon or went to wherever and got a weird crystal in him that turned him into a man-wolf, or not a wolf-man.
No, not a wolf-man. He's a man-wolf.
Right. He's 60-40, all right? He's 60-40, solid 60-40 man-wolf. So, yes, you are right, Cole. You are right. I will acquiesce.
I will bow before your statement.
I think Darkseid would tremble in fear in the presence of J. Jonah Jameson. I mean, and the worst thing that's ever happened to Jameson from the standpoint of the law is that as a vigilante representative of said law, every once in a while, Spider-Man webs his mouth shut.
And what does J. Jonah Jameson do? Attempts to sue Spider-Man. He'll sick 1,000 spider slayers on Spider-Man, but the minute that Spider-Man, you know, for his own good, when the Scorpion or the Wizard shows up at the Daily Bugle, he'll web J. Jonah Jameson to a wall to keep him from going out into a hallway where it's on fire and full of smoke, and there's a
meanwhile,
super battle happening.
The Rhino is run rampant in the Daily Bugle building, and Spider-Man puts himself in between Jameson and the Rhino, not realizing that Jameson's like, come on, kill him, kill him.
Right, and then Jameson's desk gets broken, and he's, you know, I'll sue you for property damage, Spider-Man. Like, what?
But that falls in the same category we discussed on a previous show about the legality of marriage and not having the identities. How is he going to sue Spider-Man anyway, really?
Right. But that was his whole goal, was to unmask Spider-Man.
I know. It's ridiculous.
So he was driven to a point of insanity.
Was there ever a time where Jameson, besides the robot Spider-Slayer thing, is there ever a time that he actually... they put him in some kind of a stupid costume to make him like a supervillain, at least, you know, because, you know, they've always done crap like that in like one issue or something. And
well, you know, I keep getting visions of like this guy with a mustache and a bright green costume. And then I realize, no, that's Cash Man, which is Milton Drysdale from an episode of the Beverly Hillbillies. So
same thing. That would make sense, though, because then we know how he paid for the Spider Slayers.
Well, that's true. He's in league with Drysdale, of course.
Well, I think, you know, now that you say that and you know, think about it, we all have known how much of a douchebag Jameson is. But you think about it, too, and it's actually been brilliant writing over the years of making him this way and getting away with it, not just to say, hey, here's a hidden villain, you know, a villain hidden in plain sight, but it's also got that flip side of talking about how evil, you know, the press and the media is and how they get away with everything. And it's kind of all
absolutely
connected together.
I think
genius.
What they were doing was with Jameson was predicting Fox News.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Or at least predicting the 24-hour news cycle.
Yeah.
You know, in a big way, in a real way.
Yeah, so imagine, like, if Jameson had gone into television, 24 hours a day, you would see a little ticker tape along the bottom of the screen saying Spider-Man threat or menace.
Right, right.
All day long. It's like, that's all they ever show here. And the occasional Spider Slayer that blatantly belongs to the network.
Because it's got the logo on it and a little...
and remember, it's got the ad, too, so it's got, like, Better Call Saul written on the back of it.
I think that might actually be the first, and this is a shame.
Yes.
That might be the first Breaking Bad reference in the history of this show, which
that
is
really,
crazy,
yeah.
Which is crazy to think about, because I would love that show.
It almost took until it was over for a reference to show up. Come
right.
on.
Right. The show has been going on for over a year, and wow. That's our first Breaking Bad reference. All right. Guess what? It's that time again.
Oh, is it that time?
I got to pull my pants up. Hold on.
Okay, get that handled. So we're
handled.
We're gonna wrap this up. I want to say this, Cole. You did a magnificent job of defending hubris as the bedrock in which villainy is.
Well, it is only because of my indomitable pride.
Ah, there you go, Bobby. You did a great job of confusing hummus with hubris. I appreciate that.
I just want it understood that I really wasn't confused. It's all a character.
Right. You're like the Stephen Colbert of Hey Kids Comics.
But the truth is, I really don't like hummus. It's gross.
I like it. It's great.
Well,
So what did we learn? Bobby, what did you learn tonight?
I learned, without really thinking about it, now I'm obsessed about how evil J. Jonah Jameson
right?
really is.
I really
like,
think.
I will never be able to look at J.K. Simmons in any other role.
Like,
that is the most evil man in the planet. And, you know, even when he's playing some nice father, I'm going to be like, watch it, that dude's an asshole. He's just in disguise.
Right, what show was he the dad on? Now I can't watch it ever again because I think he's secretly plotting murder.
But you know what's funny is even saying that, not get too far off topic again real fast, but now, like, as you were talking about Jameson, I started envisioning all the old Spider-Man cartoons and the stuff that he's actually scary as a person listening to him scream. You know, and the spit coming out of his mouth, that cigar flying everywhere, throwing papers. I really fear for people that stand near him now, because that guy's really evil.
Right. I think
nothing else, the paper cuts would...
Exactly.
Right, the possibility of catching whatever cold he has.
I actually want to go on record and thank Cole for pointing that out, because I've always thought the guy was a douche, but never really thought about how evil this guy really
never
is.
Never realized the level...
This may be a Facebook post coming up. Has anyone ever realized that the worst villain in history is J. Jonah Jameson? Thank you, Cole. That may be where I come up. That may be my next post for the evening.
I think that was my big shocker for this evening, was really putting that together, realizing that J. Jonah Jameson was a worse villain than Reed Richards. Pretty outstanding.
I know. You know.
I think we wasted an entire show talking about anybody else. This should have been an entire show.
About how much a douchebag Jonah Jameson was.
And the level of douchebaggery that he has had.
Well, we need to do a show, Jonah Jameson, douchebag or villain?
Right.
I know.
Write it down. I'll put it on the thing.
Cole,
what did you learn tonight? Since you blew both Bobby and I's minds.
And you know, the thing about it is, it's probably a product of all the chloroforming for the last 60 episodes, but you're damn close to it.
That makes it not fair, because he's always starting with a fresh brain.
Right? I learned that apparently God knows what's going to come out of my head.
Right.
The concept, I learned that apparently Reed Richards and the professor from the Gilligan's Island went to the same university.
Yeah, that's a pretty big one.
Yeah, and I learned some amazing things about the nature of villainy that this particular arc and the one that will follow it in several weeks are the two that I've most looked forward to in a while. And, right. you know, I'm always anxious for this show, but there are sometimes these arcs like, good guy, why do we have to schedule them so far apart? Because it's a good idea to schedule them far apart. This already, we're two episodes into a five-episode arc, and I'm just blown away by everything that's come out of both of them.
Right. I am, too. I am, too.
I have learned that we can go into something we have no idea what we want to say. You know, I often say I do my best work the last minute, and I apparently in the last minute, in the minute itself,
right?
Apparently some just dynamite stuff is happening.
So let's move on to plugs. Bobby, plug away.
Well, J. Jonah Jameson is still a douchebag.
Right. We got that.
that's all I really care about at this point. Oh, he has hair plugs? well, you can... To connect to the show, you can find me on the Jedi Cole Universe, where I contribute some amazing artwork for Cole's simple cartoon
really
ideas.
You really do submit some amazing artwork. Let it be known that Bobby submits the most amazing artwork.
That's all today.
Tonight's episode is brought to you by Hubris Brand Hummus.
Exactly. but also laststopcomic.com, where I have restarted my webcomic. I'm behind a week because I was out of town, but after a year of hiatus, it's returned.
Yeah, I think we can give you a week after a year.
Right.
Yeah. A year's off, and I've been consecutive doing it for almost a month or so, but took a week off being out of town. Also, examiner.com, where you can find all my movie reviews and whatnot, and then any other of these shows that I'm forced to be part of. What'd you think along Mrs. Jedi Cole, when we both have time to do it. And other than that...
And Mrs. Jedi Cole seen a movie.
Right.
Well, I wasn't going to say that. I was trying to make it sound like we're busy people. Come on, man.
I would like to thank Bobby for plugging everything that Cole and I were going to plug. I appreciate that.
That's why I'm in all of it. I got to plug in myself.
Yeah. At this point, he's entrenched in the Jedi Cole universe.
So. It should be known... JediCole.com is the home of the Jedi Cole universe. So
you have a website?
It should also be known that 99.99% of all original artwork on the site is done by Bobby. I think I drew that one crappy picture of Jabba the Hutt.
I'd like to apologize for that.
Oh, shut your mouth.
No, I'm apologizing for his Jabba the Hutt.
Oh.
I told you, today is all about how amazing I am.
It is. Well, we've been telling you that for years, and we've also been telling you the opposite as well. So,
well, tomorrow I'm going back to being the crappiest artist in America. But
okay, well,
right now I do a really good Thanos, and I'm happy with myself.
There you go. So next week we have what? Which topic is next week? I know that there's three left. I just don't know which one.
We are continuing with the deconstructing comics next week. If everything goes to plan, we will be deconstructing comics. Stand by Me. Where we explore the unique nature of being best pals, friends, close, non-related.
Your Jimmy Olsen's, your Snapper Carr's, your...
Yeah, your...
Yeah.
Your Alfred Pennyworth's, your...
Jarvis's, your Jarvi.
Your Jarvi, your Rick Jones's, if you will.
You're starting to make my head hurt.
So...
And your... All those guys that hung around with the demon when he had his own title.
Right. All right. You mean the Defenders? I'm going to end the show as I normally do. I think we've covered a fair amount of bases here with the villains. I think Cole sufficiently blew our mind, so I don't need to say anymore. With that being said, go out there, buy, collect, and enjoy your comic books. It's a big time to do that with this. It is Villain Month with the DC. They're launching a bunch of their villains.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's good timing. Within the new 52, they're getting their own quote-unquote books for the month.
But also, when you're enjoying and you're reading these comics, also exercise your mind and come up with goofy crap that you never would have thought of. And
right.
Maybe one day you'll have your own show on comics.
And to take the attitude of a good friend of mine, go out and make sure you start and protest against the Daily Bugle and all that J. Jonah Jameson stands for.
That's right. And if you can't get out there and buy them, hit your local library. They got a really good selection of graphic novels and things like that. So you have resources. Use those resources. Find out who your favorite villain is and find out what makes them talk. So with that being said, I'm Andrew Farmer. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night,
Bobby.
Good night, Cole.
Good night, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
I'm Batman.